this.
We can't talk over this. Take our FCC license away. You're listening to Light Talk, WGN.
No, we're talking about being in love. And I have to tell you, this book, there's a new revised book that's out, Getting the Love You Want, written by two authors, Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen LaKelly Hunt. We will be talking to Dr. Harville Hendricks right now. And I have to admit, when Bill and I were pitched with this idea, we're both married. Bill, how many years have you been married?
A long time.
I've been married over 21 years. It's like, we don't need this. But the book is called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. And we can all use some help, can't we, Dr. Harville?
Well, we do. Helen and I do. And we wrote the book. So we would think so. And it's done pretty good with 4 million readers. So apparently a lot of people need some help.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
We're delighted to get to talk with you about it. Thank you very much.
Why revised? What has changed since you first wrote the book? Was there some major thing that changed in the world of love?
Okay, that's a really good question. A major thesis of the book is we find it has stood the test of 30 years and test of time. We have refined some of the concepts that were kind of not too clear to us, and added a little bit of stuff. And Helen says she wants to respond to that question too.
Sure. I have lived with this guy a long time, and I'll tell you, it's like the theory is a living theory. He wakes up a lot of mornings and go, "Oh, Helen, I just got another download." We don't know where the downloads come from. But it's like the theory's alive. And you know what, Bill?
Huh.
Every year it gets better.
Oh, I like to hear
that. That's what I say. That's what I say. I go, huh, it's just getting better and better. And so there's a lot of new stuff in the new book.
All right. I have to jump in here for a minute. Do you guys, now answer this question honestly. Do you guys ever fight?
Of course not.
I don't believe you.
Of course we fight. We had a fight this morning.
What was it about?
Well, I would say it's not so much a fight. It used to be a fight every morning, but now we still have tension and difference. But because we have a process, the fight doesn't turn out to be polarizing. It turns out to be can be intense, but we have differences, so we have to talk about it.
I want to announce to the radio listening audience that Bill and Wendy are an exception. Like, they have a great relationship. But most people...
We aren't married, just so you know.
We're married to each other.
To different people.
Okay.
And I'm saying this because Bill claims you never fight with your wife.
So we've had disagreements.
But we say that the sign of a healthy relationship is quick repair.
Yeah.
Because we do think ouches are going to happen, and people can be taught to handle an ouch, like something that feels like a little put down, simply and easily and quickly repair it. And that's what we try to teach any couple reading the new book.
Yeah.
What if you have different reparation skills? Like when we get in a fight, it's about something stupid, and I want to solve it right away, and my husband Jim wants to, he's like, I can't talk about it right now. There are different ways in which people settle a fight. How do you come together?
Well, the answer is you have to come together ultimately and talk about your different repair skills, and the that's the secret ingredient to it all, is to be able to have a conversation and have a difference, but not polarize about it, and say, you know, when I have a fight and get upset, I need time out, or if I get upset, I need to talk about it immediately. And if you talk about that, you are actually then changing the quality of your relationship by discussing and accepting each other's difference. That gives you an opportunity to work out a repair process that will work for both of you. Instead of just operating, you know, as individuals coming with your own need, you come together and talk about what you both need and co-create a way. We call it becoming partners in the project of making a great relationship.
That's great advice.
What about this? You always hear people who have been married for 60 years or 65 or 70 years, they always say, here's the key, Never go to bed angry at each other. That's impossible. You can't be together 65 years and never be angry at the person when you go to bed, can you?
No. So I'd agree with that.
Let me tell you who Pearl Harville was married to.
Oh, my goodness.
So I am...
You're going to confess in public?
I've always wanted to help Harville actualize his vision.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons I proposed to him. I was divorced, he was divorced, and I wanted to propose to the next person I married. And meeting Harville was such a wow. But, Bill, to tell you the truth, and Wendy, like, let's keep this among the three of us, there were some few things that needed to be tweaked. Oh. Like just some little things like his wardrobe and... He would tell jokes and no one would laugh. Well, I'm good at helping. Like, I'm good at this. And so before going to bed at night, the kids were asleep, and I had his phone wasn't ringing. I had his undivided attention. That used to be the time I would tell Harville what he did wrong that day.
Yeah, sure.
Obvious.
And she
well,
made me who I am.
Well,
yeah.
It doesn't work. I will tell you that now we have a hard and fast rule that is not the time you talk to your partner about anything they need to change, because that was disastrous. We have every night a ritual of three appreciations that we share with each other and reading material that we both love to read that's inspiring. We snuggle. We tell each other how much we love each other, and we can pick another time to talk about any issues.
Their mistakes.
So we always go to sleep at night connected and madly in love.
Oh, good. All right. All right.
All right, there are exercises in the back of the book, too, for people who might need some help. Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. Back to you, Dr. Hendricks.
Yes. The exercises actually walk you through the book, so that you turn it from just a read to a practice. And what Helen was saying about our practice is that's the one thing we've discovered, is practice, 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 practice. There's no natural way to do it. It's like think about it as a skill. If you want to play tennis, you can't go take a lesson and play tennis. You have to take a lot of lessons and practice, practice, practice to play good tennis. Marriage is the same way. But the thing that we've discovered is some things that you can practice don't help, and other things do help. So you practice what actually makes a difference. And the thing that makes a difference is being sure that what you practice create safety in the relationship. And safety is created by zero negativity, practice not putting each other down, and affirmations, practice affirming each other's being. And what happens then is you create an environment of safety where problems tend not to show up with polarizing power. They may show up as something to solve. You have different points of view about it, but your partners to work it out rather than opponents who are constantly competing with each other for control.
I think it's important to have disagreements, but you're right. It has to be solved or else they will chisel apart the relationship.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And disagreements, the thing I'd like to normalize that, disagreements are not avoidable. Because every person's mind is different from another person's mind. Your experience, you grew up in a different family, so you have a different point of view about the world. So difference belongs to reality. They can't make that go away. But you can move to not being conflicted about it. You can go to being collaborative about it. So if you hold your differences together without judgment of each other, you actually create a new way of being together that's better than either one of you could come up with by yourself.
How about that? The book is called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. We've got the authors on the line. We'll continue this discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We've got the authors of Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples, Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen LeKelly Hunt. They are in love. They met at a club for people with the initials HH, and they fell in love immediately. You know how these things happen. What about this, guys? People's attention spans are not what they used to be. Does that affect love, the fact that our attention spans are so short now?
The answer would be yes, which is why it's really important that people learn to have conversations. We really promote having, even if they're short, you have conversations where you mirror back to each other. One person says, blah, 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 and you say, well, let me see if I'm getting this. Because if you don't do that, you probably missed 80% of what they said. Therefore, you'll behave in such a way that it'll be discrepant. And then you wonder, what is going on? I didn't say that. So it's really important that people talk clearly and mirror back accurately. And we teach couples and encourage everybody to mirror. When somebody talks to you, to say, let me see if I got it. And then mirror it back.
All right. You mentioned that you guys found each other after previously being married. We can figure out from this book the reasons why we choose the person that we chose to be our mate. Did you not know the secret the first time around?
When we married, we were just beginning to figure out how the unconscious selection process works and about how it's connected to childhood. That was in 1977 that we met, and we were just beginning to put the ideas together. The book didn't start on the book until the early 80s.
Right, but we both had studied that childhood wounds stay with us into adulthood.
Explain that a little bit. How does our childhood wound figure into whom we choose as a mate?
Well, when you're little, you make movies of your caretakers. And the two things in the movies that are always there, one is, what did they do that made me survive and feel good? The other one is, what did they not do or do that made me feel anxious and scared, didn't meet my needs? And the movie then is kept in memory. And when you're an adult, you will look around in the world. If you don't get those needs met with the caretakers, then most people don't. You'll look around in the world, and you're unconsciously, out of awareness, an unconscious perception level, will pick somebody similar to the caretaker who did not meet your needs. But the unconscious mind is timeless, so it doesn't know that, you know, 20 years have passed or 30 years have passed. So when I see somebody unconsciously who's similar to the caretakers, whose needs I didn't meet my needs, I'll fall in love with them. The falling in love experience is the emotion of anticipation that this person, similar to my mom or dad or both, is going to meet the needs mom and dad didn't meet. That's what triggers romantic love.
All right, here's why that's... Can I tell you why that's interesting to me? I've heard forever that men tend to marry their mothers, but girls tend to marry the opposite of their fathers. Is that true or not true?
Not true.
Not true.
Not true. Both marry an amalgam of whoever were their caretakers, mom and dad, or sometimes there's an uncle or older brother or an older sister, whoever took care of you when you were little. The unconscious mind merges them all together around needs met, needs not met. So it's not gender specific at all.
That's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
My poor husband married someone like dear old dad, not like his mother.
No.
I'm more like his father than his mother, but probably a combination.
Yep.
That is really interesting to me. And
wouldn't
you find that, you know, a successful relationship, despite ups and downs, everyone has them, family members fight because that's where you're most comfortable is in your home. But bottom line is you have to love and support the other person and care for them like you do yourself. Is that it? In a nutshell?
Well, absolutely. I think we would say, I don't think we would say, we do say that the care of the other person is the best thing you can do for yourself. And the reason we say that is since the new brain sciences have come out beginning in early 2000, we would say, a new awareness showed up in the brain sciences that whatever you focus on is what happens to you. It's what you get. So if you care for your partner unconditionally, you experience that care directed at yourself by yourself. In other words, your mind is such that it splits the perception of your partner, and whatever you say to them, part of your brain says it to themselves. So the best way to take care of you is to take care of your partner. So, and it's first. Take care of the partner first, then you'll be. We're dealing with the issue of self-love, in our culture. It says, love yourself, then you can love others. We say, nope, wrong. Love others, and in that love of others, you will simultaneously experience self-love. True. It's a reversal.
True or false? Happy wife, happy life.
True or false? Happy wife, happy life. True.
True or false? Look before you leap. Is that true or false?
look before you leap.
Yep. True or false?
Because I know that I hear a lot of male friends that I have say, oh my God, I'd be lost without my wife. She really makes all the shots. But then you see them on a different day and they're like, oh my God, you know, my wife doesn't let me do anything. Why the dichotomy there?
Well, it's people are not consistent. It's like they're parts where you interface with what we'd call congruence, and there are other parts where you interface where there's a polarity. And so it shifts, I think, if not from day to day, it certainly shifts over time.
In every couple, there's one who's more like a turtle, and they minimize their feelings and words, and there's what we call the hailstorm. They maximize their feelings and their words.
Wow. That's true.
And every turtle is drawn to a hailstorm. They fall in love. And hailstorms love turtles because their turtle can find the car keys. They can fix a boiler. Like, thank goodness. But this shows up when they disagree about something. And it's normal. We talk about incompatibility as the grounds for marriage because your partner is different, but they're also your growth potential.
That's it.
And your partner's... Yeah, and your partner's wounded, but seeing them as a part of them is wounded from childhood, gives you empathy for them.
That makes sense. So, so Helen, I'm actually married to a turtle, so what you're saying really rings true with me. We have to run, you
course,
guys.
Every day you get to go out. You're such a hailstorm.
Yep.
Bill?
Yep, it makes sense.
Especially in Chicago.
Thanks so much for spending time with us. The book, again, is called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. The authors are Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen LaKelly Hunt. Thanks, guys. Have a great Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much, Bill and Mindy.
Take care.
You too.
Thank you so much. Yes, we are not married. Why do people think we're married?
I don't know.
We would not last if we were married.
5 minutes. Tops.
Because we're both hailstorms.
Yeah. No turtles. Both hailstorms.
All right. We'll take a quick break. News is next. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.